Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Jen Barnwell, president at Curator Hotel and Resort Collection. Jen, thank you for being here.
It is totally my pleasure. So happy to see you and talk to you and figure out how we're connected from many years ago. So thanks for having me.
I think we'll talk about that too from my Viceroy days. But Jen, I want to start slightly differently here because I want people to know what Curator Hotel and Resort Collection is. So maybe give us like the 30-second download before I get into my traditional first question for you. But I want people to know what it is.
Happy to. Thank you for that. So we've been around about 3.5 years so far. So we're still kind of like, you know, in our trajectory, I would like to think. We are a collection that is specifically for independent boutique hotels. So completely independent. No big brand stuff. You know, we're a team that is completely focused and very passionate about independent hotels. Mm-hmm. And hotels come into our collection to have access to all the programs that we have to offer. So we have over 100 master service agreements with all different, you know, vendors and all the different spaces like the tech stack and products and services and almost everything you need to run an independent hotel. So what we do to really encapsulate it is we help independent boutique hotels harness scale, which you can't really do if you're small and on your own.
Yep.
So we help hotels find the right vendors for everything they need at the most economical cost, like much better than they can get on their own. And then most recently, we're a little bit more consumer facing than we used to be. So trying to get the word out about the hotels, amplify them, and hopefully deliver some incremental revenue to their top line.
I love it. That's a great download. And if you're not driving, listeners, pause it, take a look at the website because it is a beautiful website and they have a lot of great hotels on there.
Thank you.
And we'll get back to what you're working on there in a couple minutes. But I want to get started with our traditional first question, Jen. What was your very first job in hospitality?
Well, I'll go back kind of early. So hopefully this fits into your definition of hospitality. Hopefully it's pretty broad. So when I was a teenager, so I grew up in upstate New York. Okay. And we weren't wealthy by any means. So I didn't have these like family, you know, fabulous, extravagant, you know, family vacations and trips and things like that. So we were, you know, kind of in rural upstate New York. And I had a couple jobs as a teenager. I worked at a state park in the gift shop. So I was dealing with a lot of tourists coming and going and trying to sell them tickets to the shows and a bunch of, I guess, trinkets, right? And then I also worked at a 3-park golf course. So I was kind of in the clubhouse every day, having people, you know, come in and out, you know, signing up and playing the golf and then seeing them afterwards and also trying to sell them, you know, food and beverages and things like that. So that's kind of what was available in my area at the time, and it certainly fits within tourism and I guess a little bit of hospitality too.
I think for sure, especially at the golf course at the state park, that's tourism, you're in it. And so what made you do that? Was it kind of like, hey, if you want that purse or that movie to go to, you had to pay for it yourself and you put it as a job, or was it something?
Yeah, I mean, definitely that. I think, well, I'm the youngest of 3 kids and my older siblings always had jobs, not necessarily during the school year because we were all, you know, pretty intense with our academics and our sports, but it was always a given we were going to have some kind of summer job. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, part of the values instilled in us by our parents. And if we went out and held a job, I mean, I didn't get fired from either of them, thankfully. And it was, good. You know, a good chance to kind of get out there and be accountable for your schedule and doing a good job. And, you know, whatever money I made, I got to keep it and spend it however I'd like.
And so working at the golf course, and I'm sure the state park too, you're working with adults for like maybe the first time, like you're seeing what adults are doing. Was that kind of eye-opening to you? Or was it like,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, I mean, I could definitely deal with, you know, an authoritative person, you know, because, you know, my parents were great role models and kind of very strict with us and, you know, the teachers and having coaches in sports. So that side of it was comfortable to me, I guess I would say. It was more so the customer interaction. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh my gosh, just like overnight, it was like almost, I mean, it's not like completely uncontrollable, but it's like you show up at your job and you're dealing with these customers every day, right? So you've got all different types of people coming in to play golf, you know, and then on the other side of it, you have all these different people that have come in from out of town and they don't know what to do, or they want to see this thing or the other thing. They want to know about the shuttle bus, and, you know, they're walking through, you know, the gift shop, and you're trying to make sure you ring up everything correctly and give the right change. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was like, you know,
yeah, you count real change.
Cash registers.
Yeah, I had to do that. It was nervous.
It wasn't Apple Pay back then.
Yeah.
You know, so it was all of that. And then just like keeping the store clean and not letting anyone steal anything. And also interacting, you know, with my coworkers. All of a sudden, you know, I had a group of people that I could kind of get to know, and I had to learn about them and their personalities and, you know, work with them every day too. So it was a kind of a whole lot of things all in one, starting, I guess, probably when I was both 16 and 17.
So cool. I have two young kids. They're 6 and 8 now, but my wife and I both said we were both worked in hospitality at some point. Mm-hmm. They need to get out there. And I think it really, you get the reps in of seeing all different kind of people out there.
Yeah, no kidding. And you learn a lot about yourself,
yep.
You know, having to learn all these things and how to work through it and deal with it.
So you're doing that in high school. It seems like you liked it because you end up going to Cornell University for hospitality. You go to hotel school. How does that happen? Was that something that you're like, I like this, I want to go do it? Or like, I don't really know what I want to do, but Cornell's up here in New York, I'll go.
It was a little bit more of the latter. I will say, you know, I was looking, thankfully, you know, I did pretty well in school. I did pretty well on, you know, the testing and all of that. And I had that combined with, I was a pretty decent volleyball player too.
All right.
And so I looked at some of the Ivies, and it makes me so happy, but it also sounds like almost unbelievable. So all three of us went to Cornell, my brother, my sister, and me.
Wow.
It's an amazing feat, kind of what my parents ended up being able to provide for us. So, you know, coming from nothing, and then all three of us went to Cornell. So there was already, of course, I was going to apply there and potentially go there. You know, I give tremendous credit to my sister, the middle child. She knew very early on. She knew in high school she wanted to work in hotels. I don't know how she knew, but she knew. So the Cornell Hotel School was everything and anything to her. She was there when I was graduating from high school. I had this idea that somehow I was going to get a business degree in the arts and sciences school. So I actually started in the arts and sciences college at Cornell. And she was like, what are you doing? And I was on work study anyway, so I needed to have a job. So even while being in arts and sciences and playing volleyball, I was working at the Statler Hotel, which is on campus. And she was like, what are you doing? Just like transfer to the hotel school. It's so much great. You know, it's so much cooler over here. And I know you'll like it. And you actually can, you know, focus on the business aspect of it and learn about hotels. And thankfully, they had this internal transfer process. And luckily enough, again, I spent my first year in arts and sciences, but working at the Statler Hotel. And my second year on, I was fully in the hotel school and a hotel student. So it has a lot to do with the influence of my big sister, which I am very, very appreciative of. And I, you know, just kind of blossomed from there. I mean, there's so much continuous improvement in these schools, but even then, when I was there in the late 90s, you learned about all the disciplines of the hotel industry. I really kind of gravitated more to the accounting and finance and kind of, you know, corporate finance, you know, structured finance kind of classes, kind of more resonated with me. But to their credit, I mean, you get exposure to everything. That's so funny. My husband and I were watching a cooking show last night. He was like,
which one?
We were watching a recording of Top Chef.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was like, have you ever done a cooking class? And I was like, I can't really remember if I've done one, you know, post-college. I was like, is that something you'd want to do? And he's like, oh, I think that would be great. And I was like, I don't know if I can do it. Like, I'm still kind of scarred from the cooking classes.
Chopping the carrots they put in college. Front of you.
I mean, it was so high pressure. And I was like, oh man, it just like wasn't fun at all for me. And it brings back all these memories. That's a total aside, but
that's a good one.
Yeah.
It's tough in the kitchen. It was like even at the chef.
It was like the professors walking around and all these TAs walking around and everything. You're being judged every second of the class from start to finish. And it really was before all these cooking shows were on TV and you saw it. It was like you had to cook something different every week with a different partner. You could have gotten someone who's never even held a knife in their hand. And then at the end, you put everything out on this big table and the professors, whose is this? And someone tell me what's wrong with it. And you're just like, oh my God, I'm dying inside.
In the garbage.
Exactly. I don't want to taste this. So again, to the Cornell Hotel School's credit, it's such a well-rounded school because you're required, which I think is a good thing, to have a class in almost everything. And then you can go deeper kind of in any discipline that you want. And then the other thing that I would add to it is the hotel school has its own career center too, separate from the university career center, which is phenomenal and is just such a huge selling point for the students and such a benefit for the students. So they helped me get summer internships. You know, I worked one summer with a few other kids from Cornell. We went down to a Marriott resort in South Florida and the west coast of Florida. And again, it was like learning so much about yourself, letting your parents do it, getting down there, living by yourself for a summer. But, you know, it was a real job. I mean, I was doing banquets and events. I was working regularly in the restaurant. I was working regularly, you know, in the evenings as a cocktail waitress. But being kind of on your own a little bit while you're still in school, you know, supported by, it was a Marriott hotel, like this big hotel chain that brings in the interns every summer so that we can have that experience in operations. And then the next summer, my last 2 years of school, I actually worked for a big management company at a hotel they managed at the BWI airport, you know, outside of DC and Baltimore. And it was like, I was the only intern in the hotel, but it was a management internship. So, I mean, I was there every day. I think I rotated through the departments. So sometimes I would be in the kitchen and sometimes I would be in housekeeping. And sometimes I was, you know, all dressed up in a suit because I was kind of shadowing the GM. So I didn't end up going into operations and we could talk about that too, but it is absolutely priceless, I think, to me in my career that I took that time to do so much on the operations side. I worked all 4 years at the hotel on campus. I stayed one summer. And then my summer internships were all operations driven, but in different disciplines and different types of hotels. And ultimately kind of led me to this place before graduation of, so, I mean, at that time anyway, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do now, but at that time it was like, okay, you're going operations or are you going to try to do, you know, ownership or investment or finance or something like that? You know, I'd had an offer from that management company that I'd interned for, and I just felt so bad. I think they were extremely disappointed and maybe a little bit upset. And I was like, I just don't want to do it.
We trained you. We walked with the GM, Jen. We walked you with the general manager.
Completely true. It was so integral to my education, but I just wasn't vibing with the consumer facing part of our industry. And, you know, opposite to me, that's what my sister's done her whole career.
Yeah, I mean,
she is absolutely phenomenal at it. She is at the GM level now. you know, at a full service property in LA. She's been there for a number of years, and she is ridiculously fantastic at it. And it's like every time, you know, we'll come and visit her at the hotel, all the employees are like coming up to me, you know, all the team members saying how wonderful she is. And she's been, you know, gotten so many promotions over the years. So, you know, she's a, you know, customer facing operations type person. And I was more analytical. I love negotiation and, you know, being part of that. I love specifically working in the ownership chair because you get to make all the decisions and, you know, you get to work with all these other groups, but ultimately you make the decisions. It's your money. You know, you're making things happen.
Yep.
So that ended up being the direction I went in after college.
So how do you end up getting into that part? Right. Cause I'm like your sister. I've come always up through the front facing side. And now as I've gotten older, I'm more like, hey, let me see what these owners are up to and how they're making sure these deals are going on and how they value things. But how'd you get in at that younger age? I mean, you have a great school that you're leading. So you're branded already, Ultra Hospitality.
Yeah.
I love that you got the experience before you went this route because many people did not. So you actually know what's going on when people are talking about these deals. Like, no, you need that many servers. You might need this many things, right? You know that. So how did you start to go that route?
Yeah, again, I give all the credit to the Career Center at the Cornell Hotel School. So there are typically a whole number of companies that just, I mean, they come to Cornell year after year. They're always recruiting from Cornell and other hospitality schools. And so when I left, or when I was interviewing, I was looking for, you know, that kind of group more on the corporate side of things. I did not want to go to an investment bank. It was a little too scary and insane for me, but I was like, there's got to be something out there, you know, more in the corporate ownership or, you know, something related to that. So honestly, part of it is just, you know, luck, I think. So this group, Tishman Hotel and Realty, they always recruited from Cornell every year. And sometimes they'd hire one person, sometimes they'd hire multiple people. So I just ended up getting an offer from them and, you know, kind of really liking them and wanting to do it. And it was a pretty big deal to move to New York City. But again, my sister is like, gosh, older siblings are just the best. She was already in New York working at the Waldorf Astoria.
I was like, I'll show you around.
The old Waldorf Astoria. So it was my God, my mom's going to drive me to New York from upstate New York, and I'm just going to move right into my sister, in with my sister. Like, how amazing is all this? So it's pretty crazy, like overnight, to have left, you know, upstate New York and then be on the Upper West Side of Manhattan the next day. But Tishman at that time, and they still are, they're still around, they were, you know, in our collateral materials, we would say, you know, a fully vertically integrated company, which was completely true. They were part of a 100-year-old construction company. So that was like part of the office. They built all of the big convention center and resort hotels that they owned. They had these amazing partnerships with investors like MetLife. So they had these huge developments. They had hotels at Disney World. They had a big, and it was recently in the news because they sold it to Marriott, but they had the big Sheraton Towers and Convention, whatever it's called, and the big convention center hotel in downtown Chicago. They were in the middle of developing a hotel in Puerto Rico, I think that they no longer own when I joined. And then since then, they've also developed, you know, and they have two hotels in Times Square in New York City, and maybe there's others I'm missing. But when I came in, it was this analyst program. And I will be honest, like, it was a grind. I mean, I was working at least 12 hours a day. It was a little better than investment banking because not every weekend, maybe every other weekend. I mean, I didn't know any better. This is just what had to get done. There was so much work and so much analysis, but it was so great, again, for my education, my career, because I got to work on teams where Tishman was the manager of the hotel, or where Tishman was the asset manager of the hotel. And I worked on the team that was developing and building the Westin Rio Mar in Puerto Rico. So I got to go down to Puerto Rico and see the development come together and how difficult that was and all the stakeholders involved and all of the, you know, local banks and the bond financing and everything that made that a reality. And then at some point I got to pivot a little bit and work on, they called it investment banking, but they were doing a bunch of brokerage for other owners. So selling hotels for owners, placing debt on hotels that the owners needed, like, you know, your mortgage is coming due, so let's go out and do a big RFP to all the banks and figure out what the best financing alternative is. And then all the internal financing. I mean, at that time, I still have a little tombstone somewhere like in storage, right? But we did a deal with one of the big investment banks back then when I was still there. And it, at that time, it was the single largest securitized CMBS loan that had ever been done. And it was on two of their hotels at Disney World. So just like,
it was
really, really hard work. And I felt like I was always at work and making no money, not really having that much fun at the time. But now, like, thinking back on it and all those kind of milestones, and again, being in the room, like, with, oh my God, and I tell the analysts here once in a while too, when we would be negotiating loan documents, we would get them by messenger from our law firm into our office, and our law firm marked them up by hand and would just make a bunch of copies. And then I would have to stand at the printer and fax them to the CEO for, you know how long it takes to fax, like, 50 pages back then? Oh, it's just so funny. But just going through all of that hard work at a junior level is important because you really see how things work and kind of what's important. And it helped me learn how people negotiate, you know, all different kinds of contracts. I got to work pretty closely with the in-house counsel on many things. I got to learn about negotiation, you know, buying, selling of hotels, and even negotiating terms with banks on your loans. I got to go sit in meetings in hotels with the property teams where my firm was the owner's rep, and just to see what's important, like, how are these questions asked and what are the responses, and, you know, be that person that's always running the numbers and doing all the follow-up on action items, and also seeing how, you know, renovations happen from start to finish. Because Tishman had in-house people and what they call tech service. So they had in-house construction people, obviously, but they also had in-house design people that oversaw everything. So it was pretty intense to be in New York. And I worked, gosh, you know, post-college, maybe it's a little strange, but I've only worked for four different companies.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, because you were there
since I left school
a long time. You were there for 13 or 14 years.
I was in New York for about 14 years. I split my time, a lot of it with Tishman, but then actually in, I think it was 08, 09, it was 08, I left with my boss at the time to start an investment fund, and we called it Peninsula Real Estate. And we partnered up with a Irish bank, and they did the loans and they provided the renovation financing. And they also syndicated all the equity out to their high net worth banking customers in Ireland. So I had this also short stint of putting a company together. Like, I was actually the one that was like hiring people and figuring out our health benefits and paying the bills every month until, you know, we started hiring some more people. And then also underwriting our deals, you know, with my boss. And we bought a couple of hotels in New York. We had these major renovation plans. We're going to upgrade one to stay independent. We were going to convert one to a Residence Inn. And then what happens in life sometimes, it all blew up.
Yep.
Because things in Ireland with the bank were not going well. They got raided by the police one day, and, you know, no fault of ours or anything that we did. They just ended up, this bank being kind of a group of bad people that kind of blew up our company. So in a fortunate way, again, it actually ends up going back to Tishman, because years and years, like I said, they were hiring so many people from Cornell, and it ended up, In my Tishman days, I overlapped with the CFO of Pebblebrook Hotel Trust. So they form Pebblebrook Hotel Trust. They go public. They're looking for an asset manager. And he calls me, and I was like, wow, this is like my lucky day. I don't know about leaving New York, but why don't I go down there and to DC area and see what it's all about? Because I had never worked for a public company before. So it was like, okay, it's scary. And don't get me wrong, it was, you know, maybe easier than not, because I was still single then, you know, no husband, no kids running around New York. I could always go back to New York if I wanted, but why not? You know, it actually was the next thing, something I hadn't done yet. I would be the first asset manager in the door to, you know, try to figure out how to run that functional area within Pebblebrook. And when I joined in the summer of 2010, they already owned 3 hotels. They were about to buy a 4th. And it was just like, it felt like one after another. We brought in more asset managers, but it was really a startup in those days, which was super fun. Mm-hmm. I think there were maybe 12 employees when I joined back in the summer of 2010. And, you know, since then, bought a bunch of hotels, sold some, bought LaSalle hotel properties, combined the companies. Now we're, you know, 60 employees.
That's crazy.
And it's been 13 years.
Weird to say out loud. And because I want to get back to that position, because our paths probably crossed when I was in one of your hotels. But going back to where you started your own company, because this is a big deal. And we kind of just touched on it for a second. You were working for a long time. You're working within a company, and leaving to start your own company is a little scary. You mentioned your sister a couple of times. I don't know about your parents. What did they think when you said you're going to do this? Were they cheerleading you on? Like, you got this. Jen, what are you doing? You're working for a great company. You're growing. How was that?
Yeah. I mean, they were definitely all for it, because it seemed, you know, it made sense. I wasn't, you know, leaving New York, and I was leaving with someone who was very experienced and had a really great reputation and was always making things happen. And, well, don't get me wrong, I mean, we left pretty much knowing the funding was going to be in place, but yeah. I definitely got a bunch of assurances from him and made sure kind of that I was protected, you know, myself during that point of uncertainty. And it wasn't too long, but it was like, we did leave and then have to work out, you know, all these documents for us to be the general partner of this new company and how that was going to look. But you know, it was definitely a leap. I mean, it definitely could have not worked out. And honestly, you know, looking back on it, you know, there was one other kind of executive that was supposed to come with us, and that person decided not to, but we, you know, filled in with a couple more people like right away. And at that point, again, the person that I left with was so well connected and very good at what he was doing. So we had a lot, you know, of resources to draw upon when it was time to kind of really get to work. Like, all the documents were done and signed, and we were like a real company. And now we had to really get stuff done. There was definitely a different feeling from leaving this big kind of tanker ship company that's just like huge and has like just like so many layers of people, and you're trying to find your space and trying to get some recognition. But sometimes you're somewhere and it's the best you're going to do because it's so stacked at the top.
Yeah, they're not leaving.
And that, you know, you either need to kind of settle into that and be okay with it or not. So when I started to kind of realize, I was like, well, this is the best it's going to get. I don't really feel challenged anymore. Truly, it's kind of disappointing. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do with myself? I can't just sit here and not be completely interested in what I'm doing and, you know, pulling myself out of bed every day, because there's really not that much to do around here. And the company is just kind of huge and chugging along. So there was that aspect of it. It was kind of new and exciting for sure. And then once, with kind of the point I had meant to get to, once we got everything figured out, it was like, at that point, I mean, we're a company of 4 people. It's like, we got to engage outside resources for the things that we can't get done ourselves. And it was just a really quick turn. It was like, I was really into it because I was one of the principals basically and part of this small group. And like, we really need to get deals. Let's go find these deals. Let's like crunch the numbers. Let's do our presentations to the investors and, you know, get board approval and all of that. So just being involved in every aspect of the company. So, you know, for 10 minutes a day, maybe I was paying our healthcare bill for the month. And then the other, you know, 10 hours of the day, I was trying to do all these, you know, investment briefs and investment memos and trying to make sure everything was approved from our lender. And then eventually doing all these monthly CapEx draws. So here's all the invoices from our designer and our project manager and our architect and all the FF&E we had to buy and, you know, get this funded and let's keep moving. And it was a really exciting time. You don't always have obviously control over the capital markets, and it didn't work out for us, but I still learned a whole lot in those couple years.
It sounds like you learned a ton, which is awesome. And so you end up with Pebblebrook, and you kind of said it's like in startup mode. I didn't realize that it was such a small company when you joined there.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very small group at first. So, you know, they had the brain trust that was, you know, I think meeting in John's house back in the day. I don't think that's a secret. And then, you know, getting it all together and doing the road shows and figuring it all out. And they went public as a public company in December 2009 with no assets. So it was like, let's get going and start buying stuff. And to their credit, they bought a few hotels really quickly, but they were like, okay, it's time to get asset management on board. And the networking piece is just, you know, so key, which hopefully a lot of your listeners realize. And you could do it in little ways, you could do it in big ways, but, you know, it really helped that I was a Cornell grad. There's a lot of Cornell grads here in the office, for better or worse. It was really great that I had worked with my CFO formally at Tishman, because he knew, you know, what I went through, how tough that work environment was, but also all the different aspects of hospitality, you know, real estate and investment that I was able to learn about while I was there. So they just had that this view that, you know, the first asset manager we want to bring in, maybe we want, you know, more of a wide breadth of experience across kind of everything. And every asset manager they've brought in since me, everyone has very different backgrounds and everyone is really good at it. So I just got lucky. I, you know, had the Cornell connection, had worked with him once before. I came down here and I mean, the leadership team at Pebblebrook could not have been just like more normal, you know, normal and just like personable. And I mean, super duper smart. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if they give me this job, you know, I got to take it because I want the public company experience. Being the first asset manager into an organization that's basically in startup mode is like one in a billion, right? And this is the, you know, Bethesda, DC area is kind of where all the big hotel companies are. It wasn't hard to move. It wasn't far. I had a bunch of friends down here in this area already. So just like kind of checking the boxes. And then all my New York friends were like, well, you can always come back.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, low risk. Let's go see what this is all about.
And so when you get there, you said you're the first asset manager in the company. So are you flying around the country? Did you have hotels yet that they purchased, or was it just a few? What was that?
Yeah.
Like?
You know, it was really fun. And it's like that whole cliche of like, oh, you're talking about history and like back in the day, you know, how glorious it was. But it was completely amazing because we were so small at that time. We owned three hotels, about to be four. And then I feel like we bought one or two every month after that. And it was the phase where the company, you know, was just starting and we were small. And our CEO would go on all these hotel visits with me. I mean, how amazing is that? Like having John, being able to travel with John Bortz and be in these property team meetings with him and understand how he interacts with them, like how gracious he is and how respectful he is and how, I know I said it before about the leadership here, but just how smart, like a total grasp of every aspect of the hotel operation and like an insanely good eye for, before they even buy the hotel or bid on it, they know what they're going to do with it, the renovation that they want to do with it, and how it's going to perform afterwards. I mean, that really was invaluable to me. And I'm so thankful that I did take this job and come down here, because just being able to be in his presence has had a profound effect on me in terms of how I treat other people, how I, you know, try to create a certain positive culture, and how I focus on, you know, making sure what's a priority and, you know, maybe what isn't so much.
Yeah, I love it. As I'm hearing you, you're always in the room where it happens. It's like that Hamilton song, right? You're in the room where it happens. It's like from the play. I hear it. You're always
being in the room is a big deal. Yeah.
You're in that room with the right people.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, there's a lot of people who listen to this. They're like, man, I want to have my own hotel. How did these people have just go public? They don't own anything and they raise money. Like, how would you tell somebody, now we're going to sidetrack just really quickly, they want to buy one of these independent or have their own boutique hotel, is there a way to do it now? Or does it seem like it's all big money and you can't really get in right now because all the big companies are doing it?
You know, it's a lot of big money, I would say, specifically in the big cities and in the resort locations. But what I, you know, a result of, you know, being part of Curator and singularly focused on all these independent boutique hotels and going kind of deep in that area of our industry, there are so many groups out there that have hotels with 10 rooms or 20 rooms or 30 rooms. And everything they do is so, in a good way, like particular and curated and meaningful. And in a lot of, you know, what historically maybe you would say secondary or tertiary locations. I mean, you can even be a group that finds an amazing motel somewhere and gets, you know, some investors together and, you know, it's a few million, or maybe it's a max of 10 million, which, you know, still sounds like a lot, but I would say you either need to find your way into these organizations, and like they're big organizations like these hotel REITs and other investment funds, so you can be part of it. You're not necessarily going to be an owner of it. Or there is a part of our industry where you can focus on much smaller hotels in the secondary and tertiary locations. There's a lot happening there, and it's really interesting and really fun.
That's great advice. So rewind that 30 seconds there, listeners. I think that's some good advice there, Jen. So back on to Pebblebrook. You're doing great. You've been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. Kind of give me how does this turn into Curator to what you're doing now? Because it seems like you're doing a great job. Your Pebblebrook has grown tremendously from the time that I knew Pebblebrook. How does this start to change in 2020 to what you're doing now?
Yeah, it ends up being a lucky opportunity for me again, you know, just being here and working really hard and, you know, doing things like being on boards of certain organizations. So it's, you know, it could be the California Hotel Lodging Association, like having the opportunity to be on the board there and just continuing to meet new people, operators, owners, you know, associations, just finding a place where I can be part of the industry in different ways and meet a lot of people. So I did my best again to just like work really hard and try to have great results with the properties and also kind of further my reach with networking. And Curator just ended up being, you know, an opportunity that didn't come out of nowhere, but what happened was we combined Pebblebrook with LaSalle. So the Pebblebrook portfolio more than doubled in size overnight. And that lent itself, you know, to being in kind of another league or like another echelon. It was like they had 64 hotels. They have tons of vendors reaching out to them to try to get more of their business. Mm-hmm. We have a bigger scale than we ever did before. So what are we going to do about it? So just internally, Pebblebrook created a structure where they now were even more hyper-focused on where can we add value to the portfolio? Where can we save money, more profit in the right way with the right vendors? And they did a whole series of actions and agreements and contracts that saved them a ton of money and created value for themselves. And so that was all real and actualized. So curator is the public facing version of that. It's like, okay, Pebblebrook did this for itself, negotiated real hard on a whole series of things, saved themselves a bunch of money. We have this segment of our industry that is boutique and lifestyle and independent that has absolutely no buying power. I mean, that's how our industry works. It's like, if you're part of the big brands, you get everything really cheap. If you're not, you get no attention and you just kind of get market pricing, everything. And depending on your size, you may not have the internal time and resource to focus on which is the best property management system for my portfolio. Should I have a revenue management system? What about my towels and my linen and my sheets and my, you know, my coffee? What should I do? So part of it is having recommendations on all those things. And then the other connected part of it as us having better pricing than anybody could get on their own because they're so small. So we're over 100 hotels. We've got all this, you know, past experience as asset managers and managing hotels. And we've seen pricing, you know, over these, you know, 10, 14 years on everything. And we always try to find the best partner in each discipline or each space. And then the next step is working them really hard on the pricing so that we can create value for our members. So Pebblebrook did it for itself. We spun it out publicly as curator. We partnered with some, you know, prolific, very respectable management companies when we launched Curator. So we had all the Pebblebrook independents right away. We got some more independents from our management partners. And, you know, fast forward to today, it's been about 3.5 years. So we have 107 hotels in the collection. It's all about providing value to the owners and also the management companies. Again, because not everybody has the time and resources to figure out what is the best fit. And then our pricing is always better than they can get on their own. And then from the public facing side of things with the consumers, we relaunched our website. We have beautiful property pages for all of our properties. And to the extent our hotels have specific unique experiences that they provide, we have all these experiences on our website. We spend a lot of money in digital marketing to drive visitors to our website. We've relaunched our social accounts to drive visitors to our website because we just want to amplify all the hotels in our collection and send them referrals. And hopefully, you know, they get some extra bookings along the way.
I love it. And I love that you're helping the independents because a lot of them get into it. They don't know what they're getting themselves into sometimes. They have this dream because they watched a show like we were watching like Top Chef, right? Right. We get in the kitchen and then we realize, oh, this is not good. But some people get themselves in that position. So it's good to have someone that can really guide them.
And yeah, we've had a really great time. We've worked on some development. So during the pre-opening phase, and it's been very rewarding to guide some groups that may not have a very extensive background in hotels specifically on what decisions to make. So they're not only making the right decisions, we think, you know, on their tech stack and other things, but they're getting better pricing than they would have if they weren't affiliated with Curator in the first place.
Now, trend-wise, I'm seeing a lot now, like outdoor hospitality, these like glamping style places and all these unique experiences. Are you starting to see that come into Curator? Is that something you look at or is that not something that you're looking at?
No, yeah, for sure. So we like to say, which is absolutely true, we're all inclusive. As long as you're, you know, not part of a big brand, because big brands are great and there's a place for them, but to come into Curator, you can be any size as long as you're not part of the big brand. So we have hotels and resorts that, you know, have 10 to 15 rooms. We also have a hotel resort that has 400 rooms. We've got hotels that have some alternate accommodations. So things like tree houses and glamping and camping. It's really dependent on what you have in terms of development space, right? So it's mostly going to center around the resorts. We have a resort in our collection called Skamania Lodge that has added a lot of these alternate accommodations over time because it's what people are looking for. They're interested in it and they have tons of land to do it. It's hard work. They had to add a lot of infrastructure, but the end result is just absolutely amazing. We're working our way, I mean, on the prospecting side for Curator, I mean, there are way more independent boutique hotels just in the US than I even realized, you know, 3.5 years ago. So we are a good fit, again, for a wide breadth of property type. Right now we're about 50% urban downtown and 50% resort. But the outreach and on our side it needs to be significant, and we really need to go in, you know, and find these groups. And we have talked to some alternate accommodation groups, and we're just, you know, working through that process to see what kind of value we can deliver to them.
So if somebody wants to join Curator, what's that like for them? Is it a hard application process? Are you just taking anybody, or are you really looking at certain things?
There's no application process. Really, honestly, it is an opt-in situation. We don't have checklists, or, you know, nothing is dictated or mandated. We want to bring properties into our collection that we can provide value for. So it's really about that. We don't want to sign up 100 hotels and then they're not a good fit and we can't do anything for them. So on the front end, there's definitely multiple conversations about how do you run your business? What kind of contracts and agreements do you already have in place? Who are they with to make sure that we will be able to create value for this hotel or resort or alternate accommodation, whatever it may be. So there's not any lengthy application process. It's just about getting to know them and can we deliver for them? Because that's the whole point. Like, right, we want to provide an ROI to the properties. We want to increase their value and keep them in over time.
So I have a question. This is very, it happened today. So I'm doing something called the 50 Hotels in 50 Day Challenge, where I go find one unique amenity in each hotel, right? And I'm making a video series. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, but cool.
I try to make everyone look very good, so I never want anyone to look bad. But I was in Miami Beach. I'm strolling the streets today, and I walk into a hotel. It's on the beach. Okay. Should be a great hotel. And I'm like, man, this is just a dump, and it should be great. You're on the beach. You have a pool. Like, it should be awesome. Is there, if that was like a hotel, it's not mine. So I was just thinking, but they came in, would you go in and say, here's what you need to do, here's how you can do it, and consult them? Or is that not even close to what you'd be doing?
We could, if they asked us to. I mean, we do have kind of one, you know, little term in what we do, and it has to do with whether or not you would be visible on our website. So we do look at the online customer reviews, and it's important to us. So honestly, we do have one or two hotels that are members, but they're not on our website because they have like a little way to go with the customer experience, but we're trying to help them. So if we can help a hotel, maybe from a financial perspective, maybe other things kind of will come along with that, but we're not, at least to date, we're not in the business of like management consulting per se, but we can recommend like a whole set of vendors that could help them with that.
Good.
If they need it, including, you know, designers and project managers and CapEx fabricators and furniture fabricators, I should say, and all that stuff.
I'll submit my company's names to you as well after this. So we'll be on that.
Okay.
But I love hearing that. I love what you're doing. So you talked about so many things here. What are you most excited about? I'm not saying 5-year plan, but in the next 12 months, 24 months, what are you most excited about for Curator?
I'm definitely most excited. Well, there's a few things. I'm really excited for our continued growth. I am so excited, like I said earlier, to go deep into this boutique independent part of our hospitality industry and keep discovering, you know, all these new players out there. Maybe a little bit, because it continues to be disappointing when I see the big brands by the end of, you know, the indies.
It's happened a lot. Yeah.
Very disappointing, but that creates, you know, space and opportunity, you know, for someone new. Yeah, on the independent side. I'm really excited about our journey into the, you know, business to consumer space, because we want to be to the extent we can in the forefront of travelers' minds that specifically, you know, are looking for something special, something different, something independent, something boutique. We want to be that discovery site where people pop on when they're thinking and dreaming about what they want to do next. So not only can you see all these wonderful hotels and resorts, but you can see all these experiences that you can pair with them if you so wish. So I'm excited really about those two things, continuing to grow our collection and also hopefully securing a space in B2C where people can come and return over and over, because we're always adding hotels and locations, we're always adding experiences. So hopefully we can be a stop in that discovery and dreaming process, planning process.
I think we should start it now. So if you're not driving, you pause this, go on the curator website and just type in any city, because they have great places throughout the country. I was just looking at my neighborhood in Miami. You've got some great hotels there that I highly recommend, all of them that are on
there.
Yeah,
Florida's a hot spot for us.
Yeah. I actually worked at one of them that are on there. So I definitely recommend you check it out. But Jen, you know, you spent a lot of time with me and we've already gone over and you're building an awesome company now. But if young Jen was joining you straight out of Cornell, what advice are you giving to Jen today in this industry?
You know, I think it would center around just maybe finding your voice and speaking out more than I did. So, you know, go back to the late 90s. I was in a pretty strict corporate setting, which is all fine. Very serious, very strict corporate environment. I mean, we wore suits every day back then, if you can imagine.
Yep.
But there weren't a lot of women. So I didn't see anyone, not many people like me. And the culture that they created was, you know, the younger junior people, like, they don't want to hear anything out of you. It's just like, you're there to like carry the reports and you type up the meeting minutes, but don't speak otherwise. And I should have done a couple things, maybe tried to find a mentor that I could kind of download with and talk with and get some advice with, which I didn't do. I definitely should have. I'm a big proponent of mentors. And then also just speak up. I mean, I'm not saying like speak up in a meeting where, you know, all these like C-suite people are and like, I'll lose my job if I say something. But, you know, from time to time, maybe in more internal meetings, or try to take to ask questions or go seek out people and ask questions after these meetings and try to just be more vocal and make it clear that, you know, I'm kind of in it to win it. I want to be here. I want to understand and learn things and maybe be more assertive than I was as a young person.
Yeah, that's great advice for anybody listening at any level, is just to speak up about what you want. Well, Jen, I appreciate the time you spent with us. I love learning about your journey and everything you're doing at Curator. If somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would say anyone can go to our website for sure, Curator Hotels and Resorts Collection. Also, my email, I mean, email me, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to anybody, field requests. My email is jbarnwell@curatorhotelsandresorts.com. Check out our Instagram account. It's really fabulous, if I do say so myself. And follow us on LinkedIn from a B2B standpoint. Everything that Curator is up to and that we promote is on our LinkedIn page too.
I love it. I'm following everything as of today, and it's true. It is awesome. The stuff that you share is of value. It's not just commercials every time. So it looks awesome. And Jen, I appreciate you joining us today. I'm very grateful you spent this hour with us.
Thank you, Steve. It was my pleasure. Time flies. I can't believe it's already over. So thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea: to enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.